Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. It is the Weekly Worldview. I am your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's a show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do all kinds of other cool stuff. And just glad to be back. I was, I forget why I wasn't here last week. What's that now? Oh, no, that's right. We were building new digs for our animals. Our animals live better than people. They do. Getting rooms added on. Putting carpet for them today. Yeah, anyway, we're having a good time out here at the McBurney compound. And we're glad to be back and glad to have you back. And I think I already said all that. So let's just get on with it. We'll go to the domestic tranquility file where we visit in Miami where there was an ad, a posting on Craigslist purporting to want to sell a newborn child for $500. Now, police don't know if this was real or if it's some sort of hoax. It could go either way. But the ad said that the baby is 2 weeks old, it sleeps, don't make much noise at night. Formula and clothes will give it to you. Can give you the baby's 4-year-old sister for free. That's a bargain. I don't want to be judged for not wanting these kids, read the Craigslist post. It's unclear what, if any, Florida law may have been broken by posting an online ad trying to sell a child. At least one South Florida mom has been arrested in the past decade for trying to sell her infant. Well, wouldn't that case inform us as to what law may have been broken? I don't know. Maybe not. I think for some kids, it's probably better for their mom to sell them on Craigslist than to actually raise them. It's a horrible thing to see happen, that someone would actually want to sell their child. But for some kids, it would be better to be sold on Craigslist than to be raised by some parents. And I'll just leave it at that. You can use your imagination. Am I for buying and selling children? I don't know. I think it's reasonable. I think it's reasonable that reasonable people could agree that maybe the child is not in the best possible circumstance, and for a certain sum of money, someone else could take over. I think that's, we have it. It's called adoption. It costs a fortune, I think. Anyway. All right, but I think that was probably a hoax just because of the poor grammar. Or at least I hope it was a hoax. Because if a kid's being raised by someone whose grammar is that poor, that kid would be better off being sold off to someone else. Okay, in the meantime, do we want to do... I don't necessarily want to do that. I want to go... Oh, here we go. We go from there to the Straight to Hell file. Straight to Hell with Jet Rockets. Bill Cosby spoke for the first time just a couple weeks ago. Gave his first interview since beginning his sentence at a maximum security penitentiary. Just near Philadelphia, where he was the favorite son out there in Philadelphia. And what does Bill Cosby have to say? He said he's spending time helping to teach and encourage a large population of African-American inmates. Yes, he was sentenced to serve 3 to 10 years in prison on charges of aggravated indecent assault. Three to 10 years, okay. Anyway, he says, when I come up for parole, they're not going to hear me say that I have remorse. He said his trials were a sham, unjust, and not fair. It's all a setup, that whole jury thing. They were imposters, Cosby said. This is political. This is political. I can see the whole thing, said Mr. Cosby. So that's why... Bill Cosby is going straight to hell for that right there. All right, Bill. Tell your story walking straight to hell with Jet Rockets. for Bill Cosby, who will likely die in prison. very sad story to see what happened to Bill Cosby, especially since he was a favorite of conservatives like me, because he always stood up for conservative values. Little did we know that he was drugging and raping all those women. Anyway. And now, well, no remorse. Okay, so we also have, inexplicably, we have Saudis training at flight schools in the United States. Haven't we heard this somewhere before? Saudi students studying. It seems like I've seen this movie before. Well, so there was a mass shooting on Friday at the naval station at Pensacola, Florida. And let's see, it was Mohammed Saeed Al-Shamrani, a 21-year-old, I believe he's a lieutenant in the Saudi Air Force. He killed three people and shot 12 others at the airbase before he was shot dead by police. Not shot dead by military, even though he was on a military base. Did you know military bases are gun-free zones? Isn't that weird? That a military base would be a gun-free zone? But they are, and that's why this maniac was able to shoot 15 people, killing three of them. The investigators have now detained 10 Saudi military students. And listen to this. This is just eerie to think about. Al-Shamrani, the Islamist terrorist killer, and three fellow Saudi students traveled to New York last week and are thought to have watched the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree lighting. Right there with thousands and thousands of people in downtown Manhattan. That's just eerie to think about. That was 36 hours before he murdered three and shot 12 others. Anyway, I guess Saudi military train here in America on our bases. I think we should just not do that. I would suggest that's a bad idea. That's all. We just need to cut that out. And who knows? They're searching for. Authorities are searching for an unknown number of other students, Saudi students, who seem to have disappeared. Which that's kind of eerie too. Yeah, they say they're looking for several Saudi military students from Pensacola, who have seemingly vanished in the wake of the terrorist attack. Okay. What more can you say about that? it's just pretty bizarre. All right. So let's go now to a story about Planned Parenthood. Worcester, Mass. Was the scene of a sex ed showdown between Planned Parenthood and concerned parents and church leaders. Yeah, 75 parents and church leaders stood up to outnumber the pro-Planned Parenthood voices at a meeting of a local school committee. Uh-huh. Planned Parenthood wanted to introduce comprehensive sex education. Well, I could have just left it at sex. Including a curriculum on sexual orientation and gender identity. And they wanted to put that into the public schools. Well, parents, church leaders, and Massachusetts Family Institute were there at the meeting to pose a question. Here was the question that was posed. What would Planned Parenthood gain from teaching students about safe sex that would reduce both pregnancies and abortion? How would that benefit a business that relies heavily on income from abortion? All right. Well, for you concerned church leaders and parents and Massachusetts Family Institute, you're asking the wrong questions. Neither of those questions were really at top of my mind when I heard Planned Parenthood wants to teach kids about sex at school. It was like the first question I would ask is, who involved with this school is even thinking about inviting Planned Parenthood here? And how do we get them off the board or out? How do we get them out? And what is Planned Parenthood even doing teaching kids about sex? Those are two much more relevant questions. And then, of course, you would have had to physically restrain me from probably smacking someone across the face just for being idiots. Let's see here. Planned Parenthood argued that their curriculum qualified as age-appropriate, medically accurate, and evidence-based. But when read aloud at the meeting, the content was clearly neither age-appropriate nor medically accurate. Which I'm sure that's true, but that goes without saying. The Massachusetts Family Institute is working with local churches to introduce positive curriculum alternatives. Yeah. Because many parents want their children to be taught abstinence and marriage. Well, that many parents should teach them that at home. That kind of stuff shouldn't be that kind of stuff really shouldn't be discussed at school. But then again, I'm not really for school. So the organization, the Massachusetts Family Institute, is working to convince local school officials to adopt curriculum age-appropriate, medically accurate, and evidence-based. And so instead of encouraging parents to get their children out of the government schools, these godless, sexually corrupt, deviant public schools, the Massachusetts Family Institute is working with school officials to adopt curricula. All right. I have a quote here from the Massachusetts Family Institute. Our organization believes there is a biblical mandate to protect the minds of young people. And the rest of the story just goes on to be a fundraising letter from the Massachusetts Family Institute. And I'm really not going to entertain all that. Anyway, any pro-family organization, any Christian organization that isn't leading with, first of all, get your kids out of the schools. Well, you just lose me after that. And I'm certainly not going to send you a check or read your fundraising letter on the air. So they advertise this as some tremendous victory against Planned Parenthood because they held the line at one school for 1 minute. But look at the overall arc of history over the past 50 years to see where things are really going. And the Massachusetts Family Institute, they're just behind the curve. I just don't get it. I can't comprehend how anyone... Now, speaking of Massachusetts, listen to this from the Justice File. Former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick is running for president. Uh-huh. And he has a... let's see. His brother-in-law is Bernard... Sig? I don't know. In 1993, Patrick's brother-in-law pled guilty to raping Patrick's sister, Rhonda, who he was married to at the time. Eventually, the couple reconciled and moved to Massachusetts. Two women on the Massachusetts Sex Offender Registry Board tried to force Sig to register. Instead, Deval Patrick kicked them off the board for harassing his brother-in-law. And then 3 years later, Sig raped Patrick's sister again and was sentenced to prison, this time for rape and kidnapping. Patrick told the New Hampshire Journal on Monday regarding his brother-in-law, who raped his sister at least twice, convicted twice. Deval says of his brother-in-law, rapist, "I stuck up for him then. I think it was the right thing to do. It turns out he has, at a minimum, relapsed." Relapsed? Dude rapes your sister? And okay. Before becoming governor, Deval Patrick spent years advocating for convicted rapist Ben Laguerre, who spent 8 hours brutally beating and raping a 59-year-old grandmother back in 1983. In fact, genius Deval Patrick donated $5,000 to help fund a DNA test to free Ben Laguerre. But the effort backfired when the DNA test confirmed Laguerre's guilt. So Like so many Democrats, Deval Patrick has a rape problem. And I'm your host, Doug McBurney. I spent the break explaining to my extremely attractive audio engineer who Deval Patrick is. She, like so many other people, has no idea who Deval Patrick is. And very few people know. I mean, outside of the rapist that he's defended. And his sister. Anyway, it's just a really creepy, weird story. So, anyway, let's move on because, I don't know, I feel yucky now. We go into the dim new world file, where the Centers for Disease Control has announced the findings of their 2018 study. Everybody's on the edge of their seat waiting. Yes, yes, yes. Registered births in the United States were lower than the amount of babies needed to replenish the population. Now, this is a story that we've been following here at the Weekly Worldview. On and off for 20 years. This speaking of the arc of history, this is yet another arc that is moving in the wrong direction. Not in my opinion. I'm just going to say it's moving in the wrong direction. If it's your opinion that there should be fewer people, then you're just wrong. I'm right that we need more people. Anyway, I wish I could have had more kids. That's why I was attracted to the buy a newborn baby on Craigslist story at the beginning, because it just reminded me how I still have a hankering to have a little one around. That would be fun, even though I'm old enough to be a grandfather. But still, I don't know. But there aren't enough babies being born. The total fertility rate has dropped. Let's see. 2018 marked 4 years where the rate had decreased. In order to keep the current population stable, each woman in the United States would have to have at least 2 children, if not more. And fertility rates have decreased among all races. Yeah. Not just the rich white girls who just want to have fun, but everybody's having fewer children. And it's very sad. And it's foreboding. No, I don't want to say foreboding. Oh, it is foreboding, but that's not the word I was going for. It's indicative of a dim new world is what it is, as the lights begin to flicker on the experiment here. And from there we go over into the scared new world file, where an Associated Press review of more than 36 public universities has found that, oh my God, so we have a cough button, but we don't have a yawn button. Everybody got that yawn. There's nothing I could do about that one. So there you go. So this Associated Press review of more than 36 public universities, that's at least 36 for those of you who matriculated in the government schools. More college students are turning to their schools for help with anxiety, depression, and other mental health problems. That's right. On some campuses, the number of students seeking treatment has nearly doubled over the last 5 years, while overall enrollment has remained relatively flat. So there's not more kids in college. Enrollment has remained flat. It's the same number, just more of them are scared, anxious, depressed, suicidal, and all of that. The increase, according to this article, the increase has been tied to reduced stigma around mental health, along with rising rates of depression and other disorders. Well, how can you say that's kind of a circular statement? The reason that more people are telling counselors that they're depressed is because of rising rates of depression. We probably could have figured that one out. Anyway, but there's a reduced stigma, right? It's okay to now go and say, I'm scared. I'm not sure who I am. I'm not sure what's going on. I'm not sure where I came from. I'm not sure where I'm going. It's all kind of depressing. And that's fine that there's less stigma around mental health issues. That's fine. I think we all need to be able to admit that we're not 100% confident 100% of the time. Sometimes we get scared and even depressed. And that's fine to talk about it. But it is noteworthy that on the officially atheist college campuses, where students are encouraged to, be atheists and have sex, apparently that they're still depressed. So that's not the recipe for a healthy, balanced life, is to deny the existence of God and just go out and try to molest one another. That's not working. Let's see here. I've got, and I don't want to make fun of millennials like they're, what do they call them? They call them snowflake children and all that. I'm not gonna get into any of that stuff. I think that now that we're two and three generations removed from an attachment to reality, that of course these kids are more scared and more frail, and they break easier. Of course, their parents were screwed up, and now they've been raised in a thoroughly screwed up fashion, so they're afraid and they're anxious and they're depressed. They got mental health problems. I understand. I feel for them. Let's see. I've got Jamie Davidson, Associate Vice President for Student Wellness at the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, who says, it's an incredible struggle, to be honest. We've increased the number of counselors, but you're never going to talk with anyone in the mental health field who tells you we have sufficient resources. Yeah, well, you talk to anyone in any field who thinks they have enough resources. Resources are limited. We should probably try looking at the crux of the problem. What's the source of all this anxiety and depression? I think it's atheism. I think atheism eventually makes you lose your mind. All right. Since 2014, students receiving mental health treatment at school has grown by 35%. While total enrollment grew by just 5%, meaning that the next generation is more scared and anxious and depressed than the previous generation, which is not shocking, not surprising at all. And when you don't know where you came from and you don't know where you're going, and everyone in authority who's teaching you how to live is teaching you a materialistic worldview, well, it's easy to get depressed because material just doesn't get it done, right? Material just doesn't get it done. Okay, let's go now to reason number 1,213, I think. I kind of lost count. I lost track. It's going back through my notes, and I know I was around 1,200 change. So this is reason number 1,213 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. Forget negotiating with the board about the curriculum. Forget all that. Forget sending a check to some pro-family industry hack like the Massachusetts Family Institute, who wants to endorse an officially godless upbringing of your child and just work on the window dressing. Forget all that. Get or keep your kids out of the government schools. Follow after the footsteps of the McBurney clan. You can do it. It's not as hard as you think. And listen to this. Anthony Lane is an English teacher at Willis High School. This is in Texas. He defends the school's decision to bring an adult male entertainer who typically performs at strip clubs to spend a day with the children. And parents have complained, believe it or not. Parents have complained. This is a drag queen. A drag queen stripper day at school. Yeah. How we've devolved to this is beyond me. Somebody call over to the Massachusetts Institute, the Massachusetts Family Institute, and see if they take a position on negotiating over drag queen story hour, So maybe we can, maybe they can help us win a victory to provide some kids with an opt-out. All right. Let's see here. I have a quote here from Anthony Lane. He says, when asked about the drag queen at school, he said, quote, "I believe that raising a child is the responsibility of the community and that parents should not have the final say. Let's be honest. Some of you don't know what is best for your kids." Okay. Well, so I mentioned earlier that it would be better for some kids to be sold on Craigslist than to be raised by the parents they got. And I doubt this fellow has any kids. But if he did, those would be the types of kids I was talking about back when I read that story. Anthony, the teacher, who says, "Let's be honest, some of you don't know what's best for your kids." Well, that's a general statement that someone could make, that it could be true in many cases. But if you're bringing a transgendered or stripper or a drag queen to school, you've already disqualified yourself from from saying someone else doesn't know what's best for any kids. You're already disqualified. So unfortunately, while that statement could be true in some other context, it's completely ridiculous because you're bringing someone who performs at strip club to school. Did we mention that? Okay. Let's see. The school district administration has been enmeshed in controversy ever since Houston drag queen and adult entertainer Lynn Adonis was invited into the school by the cosmetology department. The cosmetology department? Well, now that doesn't surprise me. Adonis exchanged, listen to this. So this is a drag queen strip club performer, adult man, I think, who dresses like a girl. He exchanged social media contact information with several of the children in the school. He's like, "Friend me on Facebook." And now he's having, it's just unbelievable. Anyway, there's been quite a bit of backlash from concerned parents. Uh-huh. Yep. Let's see here. Not so much that they, you know, came and got their kids out of school because there's a tranny freak, stripper freak, whatever. I mean, I would immediately drop the phone at work and drive over there, throw my kid in the car, and that would be the end of that. But no, parents didn't do that. They just want to be able to speak up about their parental rights. But so when parents spoke up and were outraged, the teacher, Anthony Lane, he went on to say, quote, "Parents believe they should be able to storm the school in the name of political and religious beliefs if something happens in the school that they are morally opposed to. They forget that we make a promise to prepare their children to live in a diverse world. We are not required to protect the misguided, bigoted views of their parents." Okay. Many parents are now calling for this teacher to be fired. And if this teacher hasn't been fired, then that would be reason number 1,214 to get or keep your children out of the government schools, the fact that there would be any debate. But here's the bottom line, folks, is the fact that this teacher's allowed to extend the invitation to the drag queen. I mean, doesn't that get your attention, Mom? Dad? I mean, forget the controversy surrounding the teacher saying you don't have the right to have the last say. I mean, couldn't we draw the line at the drag queen in the first place? She's got the jack. She's got the jack. We'll be right back. the weekly worldview. I gotta come back. All right, I'm glad to be back. I'm glad. And hey, just to be clear, forget about drawing the line at the drag queen. I mean, how about draw the line at the officially atheist culture and curriculum that you're feeding your child into every day? That's where you should draw the line. That's where we drew the line. The odds of our kids ever meeting a drag queen at story hour were dramatically reduced when we drew the line at the atheism, for crying out loud. All right. Remember that I said that atheism eventually makes you lose your mind. So the idea that teachers or cosmetology departments would be inviting sexual deviants into the school to hang out with the kids and friend each other on Facebook indicates to me that these people have lost their mind. And I'm talking about the people involved in the whole the school administration, teachers, all of that, and the parents. They've all collectively gone mad. Because that's just, who would have ever thought that it could come to this, right? I mean, when, who was the atheist in 1960? Was it 1961, 1964? She had a prayer kicked out of the public schools. Madeline Murray O'Hare. Who would have ever thought that in one generation we'd go from Madeline Murray O'Hare to Drag Queen Story Hour? But that's where we are. I mean, you might as well send your kids to Sodom and Gomorrah High School. No, I'm sorry, Sodom and Gomorrah Junior High. Oh, this was high school. This was high school. All right. I'm not going to flog that anymore. I'll move on. We'll go immediately into the science. Really? File. Where we have a story from the very prestigious journal Nature. Very prestigious. I believe it's published in Boston. So prestigious. Politicians, economists, and even some natural scientists have tended to assume that tipping points in the Earth's system, such as the loss of the Amazon rainforest or the West Antarctic ice sheet, are of low probability. But here we summarize the evidence and explore the effects of such large-scale changes and how quickly they might unfold and whether we still may have any control over them. Why am I speaking with a British accent? Well, because it's the journal Nature. It's quite prestigious. It's published with a British accent because it's so prestigious. Nature goes on to say that we are in a climate emergency. It's an emergency. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change introduced the idea of tipping points 2 decades ago. That's right. There's new data suggests that tipping points could be exceeded even if the rise in global temperature were restricted to between 1 and 2 degrees centigrade. Which is far less than the 5 degrees that the Intergovernmental Panel predicted just 2 decades ago. We think that several cryosphere tipping points are dangerously close. But mitigating greenhouse gas emissions could still slow down the inevitable accumulation of impacts. West Antarctica might have already passed the tipping point. So sad to see them go. Had great family vacations in West Antarctica. Models even suggest that the Greenland ice sheet could be doomed. Doomed, I tell you. Even at a mere 1.5 degree centigrade rise. Which could happen as soon as 2030. 2030, I said. Now, in fact, mark that on your calendar, 2030, because you'll be getting back to me right at around 2030 to explain to me how ridiculous all this was. It's a climate emergency, sir. You'll be calling me up, and you'll be hosting radio shows and calling me a fool. Not just me, us, all of us, we at the Channel Nature. But we continue. Nevertheless, this is an existential threat to civilization. No amount of economic cost-benefit analysis is going to help us at this point. We are in a state of planetary emergency. That's the journal Nature this week. If you wanted some light reading about the fact that we're all going to die. And it's our fault. The cheeseburgers, the SUVs. How long did you think you could get away with this, you greedy capitalists? We're all going to die, and the journal Nature. Anyway, I'm just going to put a little reminder on my calendar for 2030 to see if the climate has indeed warmed up 1.5 degrees centigrade, which I don't know what that is in Fahrenheit. I'll have to figure that out. I'll do the whole centigrade thing, but I don't have anything against the metric system, by the way.
Yes, you do.
Well, I have a little bit against it, I guess. It's not that it's... here's the thing is, I don't disrespect people who use it. I just don't want to have to use it, that's all.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. But let's just move on.
It's easier.
Hey, I don't have time, honey. We're in a state of planetary emergency. Nobody has time to learn anything new. Nobody has to. And you know, we're reading through the book of Ecclesiastes here at the McBurney compound. And the book of Ecclesiastes is really interesting in that there's really, really good and interesting information that is juxtapositioned on both sides by complete and insane rantings of a lunatic. It's an interesting book to read to try to unpack what is of biblical value. And what is just the rantings of Solomon as he was losing his mind, as he had turned away from God. Anyway, reading Ecclesiastes, I think, is a good barometer of your overall biblical knowledge. Because there's some stuff in that book that you should be like, huh? What's this doing in the Bible? And if you can spot those, then you know the Bible pretty well. All right. Okay, so now we move from the gentle nature deeper into the science really file, where listen to this, the headline from theconversation.com, which I'm not sure how I got this or where I got this, but the headline says, "Curious Kids, How Do Scientists Know Evolution Is Real?" That's... Come on over here, kids. We're going to go through how... So what the deal is, kids, is in science, in science we look at the evidence and try to find a theory that best explains it. Do you get that? Which is an odd way to introduce this story, because I thought that we observed nature, or whatever we're trying to scientifically evaluate. I thought we looked at what was happening and then we posited a theory and then tested the theory against the evidence. That's how I thought it worked. I didn't think we looked at the evidence and then tried to find a theory that best explains it. Although I guess you could say it that way. But that to me is like they already had this theory in mind. Because, you know, Darwin wasn't the first one to posit the idea of materialism and natural... naturalistic... anyway, all that garbage. Anyway, but let's just move on. So we look at the evidence, you see, and then we try to find a theory, and that's what's happened when it came to figuring out evolution. I mean, we can see life evolving all around us, right, kids? Every kid in the room is looking at him going like, are you nuts? What do you mean we see animals evolving? I thought evolution took like millions and millions of years. How are we going to see it? Well, kids, plants and animals and even bacteria are adapting to different conditions, like climate change. Well, how about that one? Yeah. All right. A young man named Charles Darwin, kiddos, he was one of the first to realize how this all happens. Yeah, he noticed that finches living on the Galapagos, well, they look similar to each other, but they had different shaped beaks on different islands. So Darwin figured out that the birds all started off the same, but those on an island with nuts developed heavier beaks, whereas those on an island with cactus developed really, really sharp beaks. And he called this kid's natural selection. That's right. Darwin figured it all out from those finches. Now, Darwin suggested animals or plants that survived in different environments would eventually become so different that they couldn't get together to have babies anymore. They would actually, yes, become different species. And kiddos, this is how one species splits into two. Uh-huh. And there's more, kiddos. There's dinosaur bones. Oh, yeah, fossils of feathered dinosaurs. We can see that whale embryos develop four masses of cells called limb buds, but then they never grow into legs. And that proves evolution, kiddos. All this evidence supports the idea that environments change and animals adapt. You got that, kiddos? And that's how we know evolution's true. So here's the thing, folks. Everyone who's alive and has half a brain knows that environments change and animals adapt. Okay, but to state that that's evidence for evolution is ludicrous. And by the way, the Darwin's finches, I can't remember if Darwin posited that it took 200,000 years or 2 million years for his finches to diversify. I just heard an interview with a researcher who said that similar finches were released on a group of islands, atolls, and then 17 years later, scientists returned, and all the finches were the same, by the way, at the beginning, same beaks. But these atolls were similar to the Galapagos. You know, some the birds had to work really hard to eat. Others, they could eat really soft stuff. And so within 17 years, they diversified into all these different beaks. So all that's been proven is that environments change and animals adapt. But you know that the lying heathens at your government schools have perfected the art of taking that obvious truth and dressing that up as evidence for evolution. Do I even want to go on with this? I've got a little bit more from the conversation. Oh, kids, come on back. Don't leave yet. Splitting one species into two takes millions of years. But we can sometimes catch it happening. Little groups of wallabies, show a lot of intermediates. Yeah, and then I'm just going to move on from that. The huge new source of evidence for evolution came with the discovery of DNA, kids. That's right. DNA didn't disprove evolution because it made us all look insane. But it actually proved it, kids. DNA changes slowly, you see, as mutations accumulate. And this is a pretty big clue supporting Darwin's idea that living things are related and have changed over time. And I'm just going to move on from that DNA statement because before you realize how ludicrous it is, I'm going to say, hey, kiddo, scientists have looked at the huge piles of evidence, huge piles, kids, and concluded that evolution is the best explanation we've heard so far on how life on Earth came to be as it is today. Did you get that, kid? There's huge piles, huge steaming piles of evidence, kids. It's all around us. Huge steaming piles. View. Thank you, boys. One of the most sophisticated bass lines in the history of bass lines right there. Oh, all right. Let's see. So we'll get off the evolution thing. And hey, so if you're it's cold, it's the winter time, right? If you got to be outside and you got to work, and sounds like I'm about to do a commercial. We don't do commercials here. No, I'm just so today I had to be outside working in the cold. And so to help get myself through that, I thought of the winter of 1950. and the Marines of George Company at the Chosen Reservoir, a Chinese army over 120,000 strong surrounded the 1st Marine Division in the mountainous region of North Korea known as the Chosin Reservoir. Reservoir, even. To the west, the Chinese had delivered a crushing defeat to the U.S. 8th Army, and the Korean War seemed all but over. And Marines of 3-1's George Company is a tiny company of less than 200 men. Faced Chinese troops outnumbering them in some cases of 20 to 1. And by the way, it was 30 degrees below zero. The Chinese attacked George Company in regimental strength, 2 to 3,000 men, attacked a company of 200. And at one point, over 100,000 Chinese soldiers surrounded the 1st Marine Division and elements of the 8th Army that made up X Corps. But they stood and they fought in the freezing cold. Anyway, after the epic stand of George Company, 1st Marine Division, on East Hill, they fought their way out of the reservoir and to the waiting ships in the port of Hungnam in the Sea of Japan. And I'm not sure if it's the only case, but it certainly is one of the most celebrated cases of an army being completely surrounded and outnumbered and escaping alive, which is a victory. So I did not expect to get emotional reading that story. But I did. Isn't that weird? Anyway, so today I'm out in the cold and I'm thinking, these guys, it was 30 below zero. And there's waves of Chinese. They would fire until they would fire their machine guns until the barrels got so hot they had to stop firing. And the Chinese kept coming. 30 below zero. Anyway, hats off to the Marines of George Company at the Chosin Reservoir. All right, now we move on into the politics file, where we go from the sublime to the ridiculous. Because the Supreme Court met last Friday to consider whether the Constitution gives homeless people the right to sleep on the sidewalk. So in one generation, we've gone from the Marines of George Company at the Chosin Reservoir to the Supreme Court actually entertaining arguments about whether or not derelicts, drug addicts, losers, and bums should be allowed to sleep on the sidewalk. Okay. The Ninth Circuit held last year that it was cruel and unusual punishment to enforce criminal laws against living on the street if a city doesn't offer enough shelters as an alternative. And what are enough shelters? There's never enough shelters. And that's why the Ninth Circuit ruled with that verbiage. The case has gone all the way up to the Supreme Court. And Judge Marcia over at, who's this? Let's talk about the Ninth Circuit's insane ruling. They say the law forbids the rich and poor alike to sleep under bridges. Mm-hmm. That's Anatole France's famous comment about the law. And from there, the court announced the principle of human right to strike down city laws that criminalize the simple act of sleeping outside on public property. Well, hold on here. Anatole France said the law, in all its majestic equality, forbids the rich and poor alike to sleep under bridges. Okay, so I don't understand what she's quoting, but that's Judge Marcia at the Ninth Circuit. Definitely does not have to be considered rational. As precedent, Judge Marcia cited the 1968 Supreme Court opinion in which several justices questioned whether chronic alcoholics may be punished for being drunk in public if they cannot control themselves. So that was Supreme Court members in 1968 actually discussing if drunk people should be punished for being drunk if they could not control themselves. All right. That's amazing we've survived this far. That's 1968. Anyway, the court said that the Eighth Amendment prohibits the imposition of criminal penalties for sitting, sleeping, or lying outside on public property for homeless individuals who cannot obtain shelter. So as long as there is no option of sleeping indoors, the government cannot criminalize indigent homeless people for sleeping outdoors on public property. That's what the Ninth Circuit has ruled. And that's working out really well out in San Francisco with the feces and the needles and the hepatitis. And yeah, it's working out really well. So here's the thing. There's always an option of sleeping indoors. If you weren't a drug addicted, thieving, lying dirtbag, you could probably find someone who'd let you sleep indoors. There's a reason these people are on the streets. All right, I'm not going to go into it any further. They're not homeless. A homeless person is someone who escapes a forest fire by the skin of their teeth. That's someone who's homeless. And they don't sleep outdoors very much. These people are bums. All right. But let's move on into the domestic tranquility file, an update on a story I brought you last time we were together a couple of weeks ago. I told you about the family detonation in the suburb of San Diego where the father shot everyone, including himself. And everyone died except a 9-year-old boy. But he died on November 16th. That's it. The mother had taken out a restraining order against the father. Anyway, so the boy died. Very sad. I've got another one from the domestic tranquility file. I guess the Washington Post has a restaurant review critic named Tom Seitzma, and he does a weekly restaurant review in the newspaper. Well, his latest review was accompanied by a picture of a man dining with a woman. And another woman wrote to Tom at the newspaper and said, "Hey, Tom. Your latest review was accompanied by a picture of my husband dining with a woman who isn't me." Once confronted with the photographic... Wait a second. The wife thanked Seitzma for revealing her husband's affair, and she said that once confronted with photographic evidence, he confessed to having the affair. And so... Anyway, that's just an interesting turn of events. That's all. Anyway, you know that... there are no secrets on Judgment Day. All the secrets are going to be revealed. So, you know, if you're out there cheating, it's all going to come out at some point. All right. And sometimes it comes out in the Washington Post. All right. I kind of like that. I mean, I'm sad about the affair, but I like the fact that it was exposed accidentally. I just find that serendipitous. Yes. Go look that one up. All right. Meanwhile, from the war file, anti-government protesters over in Iraq burned down the Iranian consulate, and all the people went wild. Yay! Yeah, they burned down the Iranian consulate in the southern Iraq. Let's see here. They torched the Iranian consulate in the holy city of Najaf. Hey, do the Muslims have any cities that aren't holy? I think they're all holy. See, you get to like the 714th holiest site in Islam when you're it's somewhere in Syria or something. Anyway, so they burned down the Iranian consulate. The protesters accused the Shiite-led government in Iraq of being hopelessly corrupt and complain of poor public services, and they also decry the growing Iranian influence in Iraqi state affairs. At least 350 people have been killed and thousands wounded in what has become the largest grassroots protest movement in Iraq's modern history. And do you hear anything about this? The whole Middle East is teetering on the verge of just catastrophic something. Or maybe something good, but there's teetering. And all we hear about is Jerry Nadler's going to vote on impeachment next week. Okay. All right. Anyway, I personally could care less about all that, but I know it gets really good ratings. So fortunately, we don't care about ratings here because we're not hawking any... we're not hawking any eye cream or any male impotence pills or any of that stuff. No, we're here to talk about truth, justice, and the American way. Yeah, just like Superman. All right. From the Justice File, Breitbart reports, that a series of bail reforms in New York City will ensure that suspects are not jailed before their trial dates and do not have to post bail for crimes like the following. Second-degree manslaughter. Promoting an obscene sexual performance by a child. Possessing an obscene sexual performance by a child. Promoting a sexual performance by a child. Boy, they have a lot of laws against... what's going on in New York with all the... Anyway. Criminally negligent homicide. No longer a... it's not that serious. Aggravated vehicular homicide. You won't have to post bail. In total, at least 125,000 accused criminals are likely to be released from prison in New York City. When they pass these, they want to empty out the jails, so their solution is to decriminalize crime. It's insane. Anyway, so 125 will be released the same day they're arrested each year. So, all right. So that's New York City, where they've collectively lost their minds. Now, we go to the culture file, where another giant has fallen, or I should say, maybe the other shoe has dropped on a giant that fell last show. We talked about Chick-fil-A. Said they weren't going to donate to Christians anymore. They were going to donate to generic, godless, heathen charities. Well, now tax records show it's even worse than that. Chick-fil-A donated to the Southern Poverty Law Center. That's right. That's the group that says anyone who thinks homosexuality is in any way offensive, deviant, sinful, heaven forbid you should say it was sinful. If you do that, you're a hate group. The Weekly Worldview is a hate group, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center. Well, if they ever found out about us. Which maybe we'll send them a link. Anyway, Chick-fil-A gave $2,500 to the Southern Poverty Law Center in 2017. Now, Tony Perkins has called for a Christian boycott of Chick-fil-A. All right, Tony, sit down and shut up. You're such a hack. Anyway, how's that going to help, Tony? Stop eating their chicken? All right. You, what a moron. You know why Tony Perkins is calling for a Christian boycott of Chick-fil-A? Because he can gin up a fundraising letter on it and send it out. What a... Anyway, the company's CEO, Chick-fil-A, their CEO, Dan Cathy, you'll remember he held a strong belief in opposition to same-sex marriage. And he was the one who donated to the Christians. Well, I don't know if he's in or out. The company's CEO, they act like he's still there. I don't know. Maybe there's been a hostile takeover by some of the younger folks. Anyway, if you'll remember, conservatives, whenever Chick-fil-A actually made their feelings about homos known in public, Christians flocked to the chain. And you remember Mike Huckabee launched the Chick-fil-A Appreciation Day, which I participated in. I think that was 2009 or 11, I forget. But not my how things have changed. Now they're no longer donating to causes deemed anti-gay. Deemed anti-gay by people like the Southern Poverty Law Center. And instead, they're donating to the... It's just so sad, folks. But, you know, things rarely get better. I mean, institutions rarely improve in their moral behavior. They usually only degrade and decline. Unless there's a catastrophic reset of things, that can get people's attention. But other than that, it's not really surprising that the Southern Poverty Law Center is now getting Chick-fil-A donations. And so now let's talk about Thanksgiving. I know Thanksgiving's over. Okay, I know it's now officially the Christmas season. But I wasn't here last week, so I wanted to talk about the College Fix is reporting that they went out to McAllister College in Minnesota to ask students if it is acceptable to celebrate Thanksgiving. And they actually used the word Thanksgiving, at which most students said, thanks to who? Anyway, most of the students said, no, it's not okay to celebrate Thanksgiving. Others gave a qualified yes, that yes, it might be okay as long as one keeps in mind all of the oppression it represents. And they said it's really more about spending time with family than honoring the past. Which is interesting because it's really about neither one of those things. I mean, mainly. I mean, the spending time with family That's just a result of, well, having dinner together. But that's incidental to the actual mechanics of Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is giving the giving of thanks to the Creator God for the bountiful blessings that He has poured out on all of us. But none of the students would have known that. It's about spending time with family and honoring the past. Well, the only reason we're honoring the past is because God did a bunch of stuff in the past that we tend to bring to mind at Thanksgiving when we are thanking God. Or at least we are here at the McBurney Group. You know what we did for Thanksgiving? We did carne asada, tri-tip burritos, and shrimp tacos for Thanksgiving this year. Yeah. Hey, give it a try sometime. You can change up the food and still be very, very thankful. It was awesome. Anyway, back to the college fix. For the students who said no on Thanksgiving, they mainly focused on themes such as oppression and colonization. Yeah, that's Barack Obama's legacy. Most of these college students matriculated in the government schools during the Obama years, and they're now in college, and they're worried about oppression and colonization, and they don't even know that there is a Creator God, or I shouldn't say that. Because I think everybody knows in their heart of hearts that there is a Creator God. They just don't want to thank Him. That's all. Anyway, what do I have here? I have one student told the College Fix, quote, "I, like, think that Thanksgiving has been, like, misconstrued a lot, especially in, like, textbooks. It's kind of just based off the genocide of, like, indigenous people. And I don't really think that we actually give thanks on Thanksgiving. We just eat a bunch of food. And it's just a bunch of capitalist..." I can't say that word. All right, I had to censor my... Okay. Let's see, anything else from this? Oh, the College Fix said that they went around on this fine Minnesota college, and they found only a handful who unabashedly supported Thanksgiving. Well, that's nice that they found a handful. But if you're going to send your kids to the government schools, whether it's grade school, middle school, junior high school, college, public universities, all of them. Remember that they don't even know who to thank, and they're not going to teach your children who to thank. In fact, they're going to teach them the opposite of all that. And so this final story qualifies as reason number 1,216, approximately, and in no particular order, to get or keep your children out of the government schools. And that's the end for the Weekly Worldview. Thank you. I want to thank my friends at Real Science Radio, which is where I heard the interview about the finches. You should go check it out, realscienceradio.com. And, of course, my friends at American Right to Life and my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you. And may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.